The text for today picks up where we left off 3 weeks ago in chapter 27 of Acts, Acts chapter 27, and we'll begin now with verse 27. We left Paul in a boat shaken by a storm, and now 14 days have gone by. When the 14th night had come, as we were drifting across the Sea of Adria, about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took soundings and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took soundings again and found 15 fathoms. Fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. But when the sailors tried to escape from the ship and had lowered the boat into the sea on the pretext of putting out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the boat and set it adrift. Just before daybreak, Paul urged all of them to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you have been in suspense and remaining without food, having eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will help you survive. For none of you will lose a hair from your heads." After he had said this, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then all of them were encouraged and took food for themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. After they had satisfied their hunger, they lightened the ship by throwing the wheat into the sea. In the morning, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned to run the ship ashore if they could. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea. At the same time, they loosened the ropes that tied the steering oars. Then, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the ship aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the force of the waves. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners so that none might swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land, and the rest to follow, some on planks and others on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. So just to review a little bit, I've got some slides, and we'll look at these a little bit. Let's see if we can actually do this. You're going to have to do it, Kendall. Okay. So there's... Oh, no wonder the battery's dead. Okay. Anyway, there's Paul's journey. They started out over here in Jerusalem on the right. Touched in Sidon, where Paul got provisioned, went up around Cyprus instead of sailing straight across in order to avoid the wind, sailed along the coast, touched at 2 spots in the southwest of Asia, what called Asia then, but is now Turkey, last week we heard how they sailed south then, again trying to avoid the winds. The wind from the west. They went down along the lee side of Crete and landed in fair havens and made a mistake by heading out because they should have stayed there for the winter. And as they headed out, the wind switched and blew from the northeast, blew them out to sea to the southwest, and then blew them across in a storm to the west. And that's kind of where we're picking up today. And let's see, I think we've got some more pictures there, so let's just see what we got here. Oh, this kind of takes the boat through. Just click through that real quick. Cute, isn't it? Keep going, keep going, keep going. Let's just get past this. Okay, there we go. So that's where the two places they land in Asia, Antalya there, and then over here at Knidos. Keep going. That's, I think, Antalya, and you can see the bay out there that they would have sailed out of. Okay, Crete, fair havens down there on the south side of Crete. They wanted to make it over to Phoenix. That was the plan. and stay the winner, but they got blown away. Okay, and that's where the Fairhavens is, but it's too shallow for a winter port. So, okay, and they went by this little island of Clada, and then keep going. I talked about anchors the last time as a Christian symbol, so here's just some things that show you that. This kind of, from the catacombs, a symbol like that, the anchor over there on the tomb of a Christian, early Christian, and the ship as an early Christian symbol. Not these kind of nautical symbols, maybe even more than the cross in earliest Christian art. And then in Scandinavia, lots of times there's a ship hanging in a church, which in traditional church architecture, you're all sitting in the nave, you're sitting in the boat. Keep going. And there's, click all through that again then real quick there, Kindle. Okay, way to go. And there we left Paul. Okay, we can leave it like that for now. And so we were in Greece, and I said, how old is that ferry? And the ticket agent looked at me in disgust and waved us out of her office. We were trying to get on a ferry to Crete in 2002, and my wife's good research on all this told us that we should ask the age of a ferry before boarding. And though it's been overshadowed now in the years since by other maritime disasters, including other large ferries, a Greek ferry had sunk 2 years before in 2000, and newspapers then reported that Greece had some of the oldest ships on the water, and it was better to seek out the newer ones. And the story goes that on September 28, 2000, the 25-year-old Express Samina struck easily avoidable rocks off the Greek island of Paros at full speed. And within 2 or 3 minutes, the ship was listing on its side and pastors tried to get out of the rapidly sinking ship. 400 were rescued, but nearly 80 people died. Many survivors had hypothermia, and that was a modern vessel in September in relatively calm Mediterranean waters. Now imagine a large but ancient wooden boat like the Egyptian cargo ship on which Paul traveled. Verse 37 says that besides the load of grain, there were 276 people on board, crew, soldiers, passengers, and prisoners. It was late October, and a horrible storm had been blowing for days. No life jackets. Most people in the ancient world did not know how to swim. And like the boat in the perfect storm, Paul's ship was headed for disaster. As we pick up the story, Luke tells you they were driven for 14 days across the Sea of Adria. As a note in your Bible may tell you, in the ancient world, that meant a much bigger piece of water than the gulf between eastern Italy and what are now the countries of Croatia, Bosnia, Yugoslavia. Then the Adriatic covered the ocean south and east of Italy all the way to Crete. The hapless ship was blown 475 miles. This past week, out at the coast, we stopped at Cook's Chasm and watched the Spouting Horn and Thor's Well. How many of you have seen those? The waves, they gush when the waves roll in at high tide. And before we even got to the railing to look, we heard the crashing water. It's like that at the traditional site of the shipwreck on Malta, a rocky promontory called the Point of Kura or Kara in modern Maltese. The sound of the breakers against those waters, I've read, is audible for miles. So that's probably how the sailors suspected they were nearing land, as it says in verse 27. It's also why they were afraid of being driven against the rocks mentioned in verse 29. Let's see what slides we've got here to sort of get a picture of this. Okay, that gives you, there's Crete, there's Malta way over there, sea below Sicily, below Italy on the left-hand side. And there, here's a picture of the Maltese islands, and you can see where they're going to come in. It's called St. Paul's Bay today. And Kura's Kara is the promontory on the left side of the, or on the right side of the bay to the east, and then where Paul shipwrecked is probably on the left side of the bay to the west. We'll see some more and talk about that more in a minute. So the first thing they did was take soundings, 20 fathoms, about 120 feet, then 15 fathoms, or 90 feet, and the water's growing more and more shallow. So they wanted to slow down. So verse 29, four anchors go down, not sea anchors this time, but probably stone or lead anchors that would grab the bottom, really hold the ship mostly in place. And they dropped them from the stern in order to keep the bow pointed toward the beach. And then, says Luke, they prayed for daylight. They didn't pray to Paul and Luke's God, but to their own pagan gods, the gods of Egypt and Greece and Rome. But they didn't trust their gods very much, because in verse 30, the crew saw an opportunity. Under cover of darkness, they pretended they were going to drop more anchors from the bow, but instead they were lowering the lifeboat to escape the doomed ship. Paul warned Julius the centurion that they needed to keep those sailors on board to steer the ship, or everyone else would be lost, and probably kept them on board for their own good, because if they hadn't stayed in the ship, they would have been lost. And so in verse 32, the soldiers stepped in, cut the ropes to the lifeboat, and it dropped back into the ocean. Drastic, but necessary. What Paul said was that unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. And so repeatedly in describing this shipwreck, Luke uses the Greek word for salvation. He means, of course, saving physical life, but his Christian readers would make the connection to spiritual salvation. And so we're going to draw a few spiritual lessons from Paul's shipwreck. I'd like to propose three lessons here for surviving a shipwreck in your life. As I suggested 3 weeks ago, storms blow over us in many forms. Natural disaster, sickness, financial loss, troubled relationships, all kinds of things. These threaten to sink our boats, drown us in pain and sorrow. In all of it, the first lesson from Paul here is don't jump ship. Don't give up. Don't leave the community of God's people. As I said before, Christians have often expressed their faith in nautical terms. The church of our Lord is a ship out on stormy seas. But however much that ship of the church gets tossed around in the waves, the ship is where the Lord is, where salvation is. Bailing out is the worst thing we can do. My friend Jay once told me about one of the men who led him to Christ. A few years later, in a difficult time, that man left his wife and children to play in a band, drink, and do drugs. Jay asked him, "What about your family? What about your faith? What about God?" And he said to Jay, "I just don't care about all that anymore." He had jumped ship in the storm and now seems to be lost. That's why I always pray for you and for me that we won't bail out of the church's boat when the water gets rough. I see it happen too often. A loved one or a job is lost. Family conflict occurs, depression sets in, and a faithful believer just stops being part of us, stops showing up. But like those sailors trying to get away in the lifeboat, it's the wrong move. It only cuts a person off from all the love and grace and help to be found in the community of the people of Jesus. Quitting would be disastrous, not just for myself, but for others. Jay says that his friend's loss of faith rocked his own. How could someone so committed, Jay thought, change like that? Was Christ real or not? Jay had to wrestle with his own doubts and questions because of that all over again. In a storm, stay on board not just for ourselves, but for everyone else here. The second lesson is to be found in the middle of this shipwreck in verses 33 to 38. Paul told them to eat something. I understand. On that same trip to Europe, we took another ferry from Wales to Ireland in rough seas. We planned to spend part of the 2-hour trip having lunch. Nah. 15 bouncing, heaving minutes later, we looked at each other and gave up all thought of eating. Just the smell, they had a McDonald's on board, just the smell from McDonald's almost put us over the edge. Paul's remark in verse 33 that they hadn't eaten in 14 days is no surprise. But now all those on board desperately needed to eat. Paul said, you need it to survive. And once again, Paul's using that Greek word for salvation. They needed food to be saved. They were hungry and weak. Without nourishment, they would not have strength to swim ashore. Having something to eat is good advice in life storms. I don't know how many times I've ministered to the spouse or family of someone in the hospital just by getting them a cup of coffee or pulling them away from the bedside for a few minutes to get a sandwich. In times of stress and heartache, you need nourishment. We need to eat, but there's something even deeper going on here in verse 35. Luke tells us Paul took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Sound familiar? To Christian ears, those words strike deep chords. The word for thanks here is Eucharisto, from which we get Eucharist, the Lord's Supper. Of course, Paul was not celebrating Holy Communion on that ship. Most of those present were pagans. He began to eat, they began to eat. Watching Paul give thanks and break bread, those on board sensed something, or rather, someone. By his choice of words, break bread, give thanks, Luke reminds us of the one who is present in the breaking of bread. The pagan soldiers and sailors and other prisoners were encouraged. They took bread and ate themselves. They didn't know Jesus, but through Paul they felt his presence, ate some food, and found strength. The second lesson then is that Jesus Christ is with you in the storm. His table spread before us is a constant reminder of that. Don't jump the ship of church and come to the table because Christ is here. When the vessel of your life seems to be breaking up, remember He's present. As the 5th century preacher John Chrysostom prayed, Christ sails with those who sail. He sails with every believer, whether the seas are calm or rough. Our early communion service here at Valley Covenant started at a time when I personally needed a reminder that Jesus sails with us. It was a rough and rocky time in my life and the life of this congregation. I was looking for a way to be reminded weekly that the Lord was still here, that He was with us in the waves. We started first on Wednesdays with an evening prayer gathering that prayed the Psalms and then celebrated communion, and it dwindled to just Beth and me some nights. And then we tried a Saturday evening service, hoping to reach people who couldn't come on Sunday mornings. And it started out really strong with lots of people and then started to fade too. And finally, someone suggested an early Sunday morning time. And that's held strong. There were 10 of us this morning. It's a small gathering, but there's always a group of us who come each week to take and eat and remember He is here. Jesus sailed with Paul on his ship. The sailors prayed to their gods for daylight, but it was Paul's God who answered. So daylight came, we're told in verse 39, and they saw hope, a bay with a sandy beach. And that bay, as I said, is St. Paul's Bay on the northeast end of the island of Malta, off the southern tip of Italy. Let's see if we got some more pictures here. Let's see what we got. Okay, so here's a picture, a little map of the area around St. Paul's Bay, and there's Cara, the rocky place where the waves break, and then see St. Paul's Island out there on the east end of the bay to the north. That's the traditional site of where the ship went aground and broke up. And keep going. And so that's a picture of St. Paul's Island and then another little island and there's a monument to a statue to Paul there on St. Paul's Island, the little white thing sticking up there on the left. And go again, and there's the statue. And there's the looking out over St. Paul's Bay. There's a resort city there now that about triples in size in the tourist months. and go back one, then and you can, and there's the islands out there at the top, St. Paul's Island and so forth, where traditionally he foundered. So they saw a safe harbor there in that bay. They cut loose the anchors, untied the rudders, and set up the only sail they had left, probably a little steering sail, and they aimed to beach the ship on the sandy shore. Still some ways out, the ship struck, maybe on one of those islands, sand, and was caught in the waves, and with the surf pounding it, the boat began to break up. Now was the time for everyone to abandon ship and get to shore. One last danger for Paul, the Roman soldiers. As we learned earlier in Acts, guards for prisoners were held completely responsible for their captives. Lose a prisoner you're guarding, and you may lose your own freedom or even your life. And so rather than have them swim or float away and escape, verse 42 says that the Romans planned to kill the prisoners. The Lord was with Paul. In verse 43, Julius, the centurion, himself decides to spare Paul's life, and he kept the soldiers from killing anyone. Instead, he ordered everyone to make for shore, swimmers first, and then everyone else to find a board or a piece of the ship as an improvised life preserver. So Paul was saved, but not just Paul. What would you expect in a shipwreck like this? Even in modern times, a shipwreck is lethal. On that Greek ferry, 400 to 480 passengers survived. When an Egyptian ferry went down several years later, 1,000 out of 1,400 were lost. This past January, a ferry in Micronesia sank and 81 out of 88 passengers died. And again, in ancient times, Josephus tells of his own shipwreck on the Adriatic Sea, where there were only 80 survivors out of 600. Yet in verse 44, Luke tells us that all were brought safely to land. Not just Paul, but all. Lesson one, don't jump ship. Stay with God's people. Lesson two, come to the Lord's table and remember Jesus is with you. Now the third lesson for surviving shipwreck. Help save someone else. God's whole purpose for this boat was to get Paul to Rome. His main intent, God's main intent, was to bring a great witness for the gospel safely to the capital of the empire so that he could testify for Christ. Yet Paul's presence brought salvation to everyone. Just the opposite of Jonah. Remember when Jonah in the Old Testament ran from God by taking a ship to Tarshish? He was a threat to everyone on board. A storm came up and endangered the boat because of Jonah. They threw him overboard to stop the storm. The presence of Jonah was a menace. But here in Acts, the presence of Paul on board that ship was its crew's salvation. By faith in Jesus and service to God, Paul brought them all to safety. If you stay on board, if you remember Jesus is with you, if you serve him faithfully, even in the middle of a shipwreck, God can use you to save others from shipwreck. He did it with Paul. He still does it. Last year, Kim took over as site leader for the Egan Warming Center in our building, and her dedication and care helped us give shelter in bad weather to hundreds of people, maybe saving some lives. This summer, Carrie accepted the role of liaison to Kennedy Middle School and led us in two evenings of yard work there just recently. And as I hope you heard, did you read that letter last week, Carrie? Carrie's not here. Did that letter get read last week? Great. So you heard. The result was the love of Jesus was shown to staff and teachers and students. In a couple weeks, Pete will attend a meeting about changes in the family shelter that we've hosted for three decades so we can keep on serving those parents and children. And these three people who've been saved by Jesus serve him by helping save others. And I could go on and on. You who work on our parking ministry team, you who teach children in Sunday school and children's church, you who take meals to those who are sick or struggling, not to mention those of you who go on mission trips or volunteers in other ways, or whose very employment puts you on the front line in our community showing love and care to people who need the salvation of Jesus. We may not always be able to see it work out completely in others' lives, but when you stay on board and seek the presence of Christ, even when your own ship is sinking, you stay exactly where you need to be to save someone else. Your faithfulness in your own trial could be just what's needed to offer Jesus' grace and love to another worried sailor. That's the way to survive a shipwreck. Stay on board, come to the table, and remember Jesus is with you. And when you have opportunity, rescue someone else. Those are the lessons from Paul. And the great good news of it all is right there in verse 44 again. All were brought safely to land. In a few moments, we'll confess our faith, saying we believe in Jesus, and at the end saying we believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting. No one who trusts in Jesus ever needs to fear a shipwreck. No one needs to be lost. Everyone who believes in Jesus will be saved. Everyone, forever. Amen.